it's Diane. Great to be back with you for a Tuesday edition of On My Mind. Well, it's official. After months of anticipation, Amazon has selected Long Island City in New York and Crystal City in Virginia as homes to their next headquarters. Big wins for the two urban areas. And as many pointed out, smart choices for Amazon, too. But with the news, the hope that the company might spark economic life into one of the country's less prosperous cities is extinguished. The New York Times' Emily Badger covers the intersection of many of the issues raised by the Amazon story: urban policy, transportation, inequality, and how it's all connected. She joined me in the studio Tuesday morning, just moments after the official announcement was made. Emily, it's great to see you.
It's great to be here.
Let's take a look back. Remind us of how many cities Amazon was considering initially, and now we come down to the decision.
So when they originally released this open-ended invitation for anyone and everyone to apply, they got 238 separate applications. Many of them were from places that had no chance. They probably knew that they had no chance, but this was kind of a game everyone had to participate in. And then they narrowed that list down to 20 places earlier this year, which was starting to look a little bit more realistic, but that's still a very long short list, 20 places they were considering. And then two of the places on that list, obviously, which they announced today they're going to split the headquarters between, are Northern Virginia, Crystal City outside of Washington, and Long Island City in New York.
Talk about why there was such a frenzy over all this.
I mean, this was a game-changing economic development opportunity for just about any community that got it. I mean, we were talking about 50,000 jobs. We were talking about six-figure salaries for those 50,000 jobs. And then if you consider, you know, economists expect those 50,000 jobs to then sort of create other jobs as those people then need, you know, daycare workers and baristas. And there would be a multiplier effect on top of that. And we often see companies, you know, get cities to bid against each other in order to get economic development prizes, to open a factory, something like that. But we never see anything on the scale of what Amazon was offering in this case. And so it was absolutely unprecedented. And that's why I think, you know, every elected official under the sun felt like they needed to compete for this thing.
Tell me what individual employees are going to have to do to earn that six-figure job.
So these are often described as tech jobs, but I don't think that that literally means they will all be engineers. I mean, a company like Amazon employs a lot of sort of professional services type people who support a tech company. So they are going to be hiring people who, you know, are in more like media and advertising jobs as well. They're going to be hiring people who are lawyers. You know, they're going to be hiring people with lots of different kinds of sort of white collar skills. Invariably, these will be people who have college degrees, maybe even advanced degrees beyond that. They're basically looking to hire the kinds of people who we already know we have a ton of in Washington and who already exist in spades in New York City.
So the infrastructure is here and in New York, both in structure, actual structure, and personnel structure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were very explicit about those two things that they were looking for. You know, they were looking for physical infrastructure in the form of, you know, a community that's got good public transit, that's got a very highly connected airport that would quickly get them to lots of other places, including back to the headquarters in Seattle. You know, they were looking for a community that I think could accommodate this many new workers coming into it, and thinking about what are the traffic impacts of that going to be? What about where all of these people are going to live? But I think, you know, equally important to all of that physical infrastructure was this kind of human capital infrastructure. You know, it would be incredibly difficult for a company like Amazon to drop into a city that doesn't already have a ton of tech workers and immediately, over the course of about a decade or so, hire 50,000 of them. I mean, they basically had to go somewhere that already had a lot of these people, where they could poach these people from other companies. It's just unrealistic to think that they could have gone into a community and created those 50,000 workers out of people already living there doing radically different things, training up people, you know, who don't have these skills, and some combination of that plus, you know, luring lots of other people to move in.
Tell me what Virginia and New York are going to have to give back to Amazon in order to have them come there.
So this was a big question for the last year. I mean, obviously, everyone was competing to offer a big incentive. And this is also why Amazon has been very heavily criticized for this process, for basically opening up a bidding war to get companies to offer them as much as possible. And we saw some really unprecedented numbers. You know, the city of Newark, the state of Maryland, offering them, you know, on the order of $6 to $8 billion worth of incentives. You know, these are numbers that are even larger than, for instance, what Wisconsin offered Foxconn to get them to open up a very large factory there. In the numbers that they released this morning, they're smaller than the largest bid they could have gotten. So we're talking about incentives that are more on the order of like $1.5 billion coming from each community. And Amazon this morning in its announcement was very explicit that we don't get the incentives that are being offered to us unless we actually create all of the jobs that we say we're going to create. So you can see that they're trying to get a little bit ahead of the criticism they're going to get. But it is clear at the end of the day, they did not pick the community that offered them the biggest incentives. And I think that that's not a surprise, because at the end of the day, that's not really what they were looking for.
Emily, it started the conversation. You talked about how many communities around the country had bid, but was there ever really a contest?
In retrospect, it does not look like there was a contest, because they picked the two places that many people predicted they would have picked a year ago. You know, Washington and New York did not have to come up with some crazy creative scheme in order to lure them there. There was probably nothing in their bids that told Amazon something Amazon didn't already know about these communities and the assets of these communities. And so I think that at the end of the day, this looks a little bad for Amazon. Amazon has already been very heavily criticized over the last week since this news first leaked out. And I think they will continue to be criticized for having kind of gotten lots of communities' hopes up. I mean, lots of cities spent a lot of time and resources putting together these bids, you know, sort of ginning up political will. And at the end of the day, it looks like, you know, Amazon was just going to go where we knew they were going to go a year ago. So why did they put everybody through this?
So as I understand it, the distribution centers will stay exactly where they are. This is not the creation of anything new in that regard.
No. I mean, Amazon as a company employs lots of very different kinds of workers and does lots of very different kinds of work. So, you know, you have these giant warehouses that are spread all across the country that are, you know, in more sort of suburban, exurban, almost rural communities, where Amazon can buy up a lot of land and put an enormous warehouse, and where they can employ, you know, workers for $10 to now $15 an hour in order to fulfill your orders and ship you things. Those are very different jobs from the jobs that we're talking about that are based in their headquarters in Seattle and that are going to be based in these two locations, where we're talking about $150,000 a year salaries for highly educated tech workers. So, you know, they're not talking about minimum wage warehouse jobs in these cities that would employ someone without a college degree.
They also today said that Nashville would be the new center for excellence for operations in business. What does that mean?
I think that this was a smart move on their part to say, you know, yes, we picked these two places that everyone thought we were going to pick, but we're also, you know, sort of giving a consolation prize to a community that most people didn't think we were going to pick. You know, for all the reasons that we've already discussed, putting 50,000 tech jobs in Nashville, I think would have been a stretch for the company. But by announcing, you know, a sort of smaller investment in a smaller community, they're sort of bolstering the case that, you know, we were open-minded about these other communities. We learned something about them we didn't already know. And, you know, so we're going to be making some investments in these other places too. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Nashville isn't the only community on that list of 20 finalists where they put sort of sizable investments.
But the question remains, doesn't this sort of continue the notion that the rich get richer and the poor sort of stay where they are?
Yeah, I think that to me is the most important takeaway to this. We have this trend in the economy as we come to rely more and more on tech companies, that, you know, all of the really high paying jobs, all of the sort of innovation, the creation, the sort of economic growth is increasingly being clustered in a small number of places. And those small number of places are, you know, they're not surprisingly, they're coastal cities that people often refer to as elite. You know, it's San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, New York. This is a trend that's been happening for a long time. Amazon's not responsible for this trend, but Amazon is making this trend, you know, it's sort of in your face now as a result of this announcement.
And what does that mean for all of the rest of the country? Places like Michigan, direly in need of help. I mean, does it mean that the wealthy people and the wealthy wage earners stay right where they are?
Yeah, there's a sort of path dependency in this process where cities like Washington and New York, because they already have highly educated workers there, you know, companies that pay very well want to be there because the workers are there. Because those high-paying companies are there, other high-paying companies want to go there. Because all those high-paying companies are there, you know, college-educated workers from Michigan move to those places. And these forces just keep sort of reinforcing each other and reinforcing each other such that, you know, because Amazon is moving to Washington and New York, other tech companies are going to move to Washington and New York. And because those tech companies move there, you know, still more tech companies are going to move there. And, you know, all of that is opportunity that is not going to be located in mid-sized cities in the middle of the country. And I think this is perhaps one of the unintended consequences of this entire process, which maybe Amazon didn't think very much about in the beginning, but all of this feels very zero-sum. You know, because New York and Washington are getting these jobs, Columbus, Ohio, and Indianapolis are not going to get these jobs. So it's very easy to draw a line between, you know, these cities win and all of these other places lose.
So what's that going to mean for all those other areas of the country that are going down in both population, education, and salaried employees? This sort of emphasizes that whole trend. What are we going to see happen as a result?
We do not have great policy ideas about how to fix this regional inequality. The fact that, you know, the New Yorks and Washingtons, Seattles and San Franciscos of the world are sort of pulling away from all of these other communities. They are leaving them behind. We tend to think about sort of economic policy in America as kind of national policy. We don't think about it as maybe we should be doing something radically different in shrinking, struggling communities than what we're doing in prosperous, successful communities. So there's absolutely a need for some radical thinking on this front. As far as what these communities themselves could be doing, I've talked to a number of economists and economic development professionals who have really lamented the fact that these communities put all of this effort into applying for basically to win the Amazon lottery. And they could have put that kind of effort into sort of less successful, or not less successful, but less kind of prominent, attempts to, you know, to create more opportunity. You know, try to seed your own small tech hub in your community. You know, what are you doing in order to provide technical training to community college students in your community? You know, why didn't all of these 238 communities, many of them should have been doing that kind of work instead of putting together a proposal to try to get Amazon to come when Amazon was never going to come in the first place?
The president has talked about a new infrastructure program, which he says he can work very well with Democrats. Could infrastructure be the answer for not only the large communities, but the smaller ones?
It's definitely true that these mid-sized and smaller communities lack a lot of physical infrastructure that helps Washington and New York prosper. I mean, the fact Amazon specifically said, you know, we want transit, you know, we want airports, we want things like that. And it's not so much that if these smaller communities invested in infrastructure in that way, Amazon would have chosen them. But if they had invested infrastructure in that way, you know, I think it would have made them a little bit closer to sort of resembling what a successful economy in the modern era looks like. You know, these are amenities that lure college-educated professionals to want to live in these places. They create kind of quality of life in these places. And we know that kind of quality of life amenities are a big part of the allure for the kinds of workers that a company like Amazon is looking for. But probably the real solutions have more to do with human capital than they have to do with physical infrastructure. They have to do with how these communities are investing in their workers, how they're training their workers, how they're, you know, offering opportunities for workers to, you know, do higher paying jobs than just service sector jobs.
And now a quick break. When we come back, more with Emily Badger.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District,
Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here's Emily Badger, urban policy reporter for The New York Times. So you've got Virginia and New York. On the other hand, couldn't it be argued that the benefits of locating in those two spots will spread to other states, perhaps West Virginia, perhaps Maryland, D.C., and ditto in surrounding areas of New York?
I absolutely think that the benefits will be felt in a wider radius than just the immediate neighborhoods where these places are going to go. But if we look at the entire Northeast corridor in between these two cities, Washington and New York, these are places that for the most part are already doing fairly well. You know, I've seen several people speculate that, you know, we're sort of trending toward this megalopolis, like just this one enormous contiguous urban mass all along the Northeast Corridor, which is effectively like one giant labor market. And, you know, the areas contained in that, including places like Philadelphia, including perhaps Baltimore, those are not the really unlikely places. You know, that I think this is going to be less felt in West Virginia. It's going to be less felt in, you know, parts of Virginia that are still economically struggling. If there are spillover benefits of this, we're going to feel them in this Northeast corridor that is already doing quite well relative to the rest of the country.
And, of course, last week we had the midterm elections. Do you see any relationship between the outcomes of those elections and Amazon's choices?
Absolutely. I mean, I think these larger economic trends of prosperity and opportunity concentrating in a small number of places is directly related to the sense of kind of alienation that much of the country feels from the economic recovery. You know, the president talks about people who've been left behind and forgotten. And in fact, the economic forces that I'm describing have forgotten about these people. They have left these people behind. And I often think, too, that, you know, we're in this sort of cultural moment where there's lots of alienation from, you know, quote unquote, elite liberal coastal cities in much of the heartland of the country, in, you know, Trump's America, red counties. And it's absolutely true that, you know, opportunities like this, job growth like this is concentrating in these, you know, coastal, very deeply blue, already prosperous places. And it is not happening in many other parts of the country that feel alienated from a place like Washington.
Now, in New York, I gather it's going to be situated in Queens. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Talk about the infrastructure that's already there in Queens.
So the two locations that they've chosen are very similar in that they are both just across the river from kind of the main economic center. So Crystal City is right across the river from Washington. It's very close to downtown Washington. Long Island City in Queens is just right across the river from Manhattan. They are both a subway ride away from being kind of in the middle of downtown in either of those respective cities. Long Island City is a place where there is still room and there's an expectation that there will be a lot of economic development there in the coming years. It is a economically diverse community at the moment. The largest public housing project in the country is located not that far away from where Amazon is talking about going. And there is a tremendous amount of development, what some people would call gentrification, happening there right now. That's a little bit different from Crystal City. Crystal City has long been sort of a hub of office workers. This Crystal City is not a community that has public housing in it or, lower income, affordable housing
right,
in it.
Right.
And in Crystal City, we're expecting Amazon to move into a lot of office space that already exists, whereas in Long Island City, we are expecting them to build a lot. There's room to build a lot in Long Island City. There's not room to build a lot in Crystal City, but there is this, this kind of prime location office space that's been relatively underutilized for the past decade or so that they're going to be able to move into. So in some ways, these two locations are very similar in how they're situated relative to the downtowns of these respective cities. But in other ways, they're a little bit different.
So where are all these people going to live if, in fact, take Crystal City, Amazon's going to use that space for its business?
I would assume in each location, we're now talking about 25,000 jobs since they're sort of splitting what was originally a promise of 50,000 jobs. I would assume that many of those people already live in these communities. They are not going to be picking up 25,000 workers and moving them here or attracting 25,000 workers we don't already have here. You know, these are going to be people who may already be working for different kinds of tech companies in the area. Now they're going to go work for Amazon or Amazon's going to start competing for those workers. So I don't think it's quite right to assume that we will have 25,000 new households in each of these locations, even when they ramp up to the full number of jobs they're expected to have. But they also, it's quite striking to me that they picked two communities where their impact is going to be felt much more lightly than in just about any other option they had. I mean, these are very large regions with the capacity to absorb more people and more workers. It doesn't feel this way because the cost of housing is so expensive in both of these cities. But in Washington, there's a tremendous amount of apartment construction going on inside the District of Columbia. There's a lot of new apartment construction that's going to be happening in Long Island City as well. That is a very different scenario from if we were talking about dropping 50,000 Amazon jobs into a mid-sized city, and then we would really be wondering, where are they going to put these people? Where are they going to live? How are they going to get around?
I'm still wondering how traffic might be affected.
Well, I think that everyone else who lives in these two cities should be thankful that Amazon chose locations that are transit dependent. They intentionally chose locations where most of their workers will be able to get to the office by something other than a car. So these 25,000 workers are not going to mean 25,000 cars crammed into Crystal City or crammed into Queens. And in that way, Amazon is being sort of good stewards of the community where they're going to be based, but they will certainly add to traffic. That's not to say they're not going to add to traffic at all, but I think the hope would be that, some of their investment would be made in the infrastructure. And Amazon has already said, for instance, we're going to invest in the metro stations in Crystal City. And, I think that they recognize that they're going to need to help expand the capacity of the infrastructure to absorb the people who they're going to put there.
Emily, I want to ask you about the people who work for Amazon. Is there a kind of mindset? Is there a way of thinking in such a huge company that sets those people apart from somebody, say, who works at WAMU?
I don't know that Amazon workers are unique from other tech workers, but I do think that tech workers are a little bit sort of unique to other kinds of workers. I believe that the worker that Amazon had in mind when they're thinking about where should we move is a, you know, relatively young, 20, maybe 30-ish, very highly educated person who cares a lot about living somewhere where there are bars and restaurants and, you know, where there will be amenities, you know, someone who is a public transit rider. That is the profile of the worker that they had in mind based on what they told cities that they were looking for. What's missing from that picture, you know, they didn't say, we want to go somewhere where our employees will have a great school system for their children. You know, and that's sort of a kind of classic critique of the tech industry that, you know, their workers are sort of young, they're childless, they don't have to think as much about, you know, sort of investing in schools and whether or not, for instance, in Silicon Valley, their workers can afford to have families and buy houses and stay to live there. A couple of people pointed out to me that that some of the regions that they focused on were not particularly family friendly on various metrics that you could measure. And my response to that is, well, we had no indication that they were looking for places that were family friendly. I don't think that that's very high on their priority list.
So, for example, middle-aged people who may have the skills but who've been laid off from other companies, they're not the ones that Amazon's looking for?
I think when they were looking for a very large pool of workers, they're primarily envisioning this kind of younger.
Younger.
But in a scenario where they are looking to make so many hires very rapidly, I think it's absolutely plausible to me that that's a great opportunity to be in if you are more kind of mid-career or even later career and you have these skills and you're looking for work. I mean, there is now going to be a really, really strong hiring market for people with these skills in these two locations. If there isn't already, there is already. It'll be even stronger than it is now.
Emily, any other thoughts on the downsides of locating in Virginia and New York?
I mean, I think the way that I think about all of this at the end of the day is that, you know, Amazon made a decision that is great for Amazon. They're going to the two locations where they are going to be incredibly successful. We know they're going to be successful because they have all the ingredients they need around them to be successful. And this is going to be great in many ways for these two locations. But basically, this is not a great outcome for the rest of the country because it reinforces these patterns of regional inequality, of kind of winner take all, the winners keep prospering, the losers keep, you know, sort of missing out on opportunities. But maybe because this has been such a high profile example of this pattern, you know, maybe it will galvanize more kind of policy thinking about what do we do about the places that have been left behind. You know, maybe some of those places will find things that they put in their Amazon proposal that they can actually act on and turn into something useful. I think that would be the best case scenario for those 236 other places, that some of them would find something that they could take action on that came out of all of this.
Emily, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that's all for today. I'll be back with you on Friday. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org, or leave us a voicemail. The number is 202-854-8851, and go to our website, dianereem.org. Our theme music was composed by Cliff Harden, comes to us courtesy of the Capitol Soundtrack Project here at WAMU. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Douglas Bell and Natalie Urev-Lipker. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.